Welcome back. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. All eyes are on California's Proposition 37, which would require the mandatory labeling of genetically modified foods. If Prop 37 passes, California would become the first state in the country to require new labels on a host of things we eat, including cereals, sodas, vegetable oils, and tofu. Prior attempts for GMO labeling have been defeated by legislators in 19 states in the U.S., but it is required in more than 50 countries around the world, including Japan and most of Europe, also Australia. So why is GMO labeling so contentious here in the U.S.? Do you want to see GMO labels on the food you eat? On today's Your Call, we are continuing our election coverage with a debate about Prop 37. A lot of money is being poured into these campaigns. The Cornucopia Institute recently put together a graphic showing the funders. The Yes on 37 side has raised almost $4 million so far from mostly small organic companies like Amy's, Nature's Path, and Dr. Bronner's. Joseph Mercola is one of the main financial supporters of Yes on 37. He's given just over $1 million. He's an osteopath who lives in suburban Chicago. He says, quote, "Your health care, your food supply, everything you need to live a healthy life is now being taken away and controlled by a massive industrial complex and corrupt government." And today we are joined by Tom Fendley. He's political director for the Yes on Prop 37 side, the California Right to Know Act. And Tom joins me here in studio. Hi, Tom. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Rose. It's great to be here.
Great to have you. And the No on 37 side has raised almost $32.5 million from multinationals and corporations that own organic companies. You've got Monsanto, $7 million, Pepsi, which owns Naked Juice, $1.7 million, and Coca-Cola, which owns Odwalla and Honest Tea, $1.1 million. And we'll go over more of the funders on both sides throughout the show. On the No side, we are joined by Greg Paula. Greg is a cotton and corn farmer from Kern County. The Kern County Farm Bureau is one of the opponents to Prop 37. Hi, Greg. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Good morning. So let's start off by going over the basics. And Tom, since you support Prop 37, give us an overview. What would Prop 37 do if it passes?
Sure. Well, you know, despite our opponents' best efforts to sort of present Prop 37 as a very confusing, complicated measure, it really is at its very core, both in terms of its motives and its actual language, quite simple. Prop 37 would simply label foods that are genetically engineered, focused on packaged foods and raw foods. So the idea is that Prop 37 will empower Californians with the right to know basically what's in their food so they can make a more informed buying decision. Meanwhile, you know, farmers and food manufacturers, you know, at the end of the day, regardless of whether or not Prop 37 passes, they'll still be able to feel free to grow and sell food products with genetically engineered ingredients.
And does this apply to all food? Because I read that it does not apply to dairy and animals.
Right. Well, the animal, if it itself was genetically engineered, it would indeed apply. And that will be soon become very relevant because we have genetically engineered salmon coming down the pike right now, so to speak. So, you know, that's been engineered, by the way, with an eel. So, but no, it doesn't apply to the feed of cattle as well.
Okay, so just to give, let's just paint kind of a picture here what it would look like. Because when I hear about genetically modified foods, you often hear about canola oil, right? Mm-hmm. So, for example, I was at my mom's yesterday. She has some chips that had canola oil in them. If that canola oil is genetically modified, would that bag have to say what?
That it contains genetically engineered ingredients. Exactly right.
Okay, so it would kind of look like the organic label or the no animal testing label.
Language is pretty simple. It would say pretty much exactly what I just said, that this product contains genetically engineered ingredients. And indeed, this covers we've reached the point, you know, the genetically engineered foods have been on the market for less than 20 years in this country.
And we'll go over that in just a minute.
Sure.
But I just want to go over the basics because this is really important. So that is Tom Fendley. He's with Yes on Prop 37. And Greg, you're with No on Prop 37. So it sounds pretty good. If you really, you know, if you care about what you're eating, you want to know if genetically modified foods are in my potato chips, for example, why not just have a GMO label on the bag? Why do you oppose that?
Well, first of all, as Tom said, it's quite simple. They tried to make this proposition quite simple, but in fact, the trial attorney that wrote the law for them made it anything but simple. And I think, as the common phrase is known, the devil is in the details. The details of this proposition is, I think, what has provided the basis for the biggest objection from groups like the NAACP, the Farm Bureaus, the Chambers of Commerce, a number of taxpayers associations, a number of medical associations. There's so many elements about the details of this proposition that are poorly written and will ultimately cost California consumers a lot of money for no good reason.
All right, so let's go over those, Greg.
Sure.
Since you're a cotton and a corn farmer, what concerns you the most about Prop 37?
Well, I think what concerns me the most is it's not really about just giving information to the consumer, because I think farmers are among the most interested in getting their message to consumers, how safe the food supply is, how much improved the GE cropping system is for the environment, for the workforce that works within it, and ultimately the safety of the nutrition for the consumers. There's over 400 peer-reviewed journals that have been come out that's supporting the concept of GE cropping systems and the safety of them, the World Health Organization, the National Academy of Sciences.
But Greg, I'm still trying to figure out what concerns you the most about specific Prop 37 and specifically the labeling requirement.
Well, specifically the labeling requirement is concerning because it would add additional costs for no benefit to the consumer. There would be no law that this law does not require any of the ingredients be changed. And so the cost of record keeping for farmers, grocers, retailers, handlers, those would all be passed on to the consumer. And I don't think that's good for the consumer at all. Those concern me.
All right. Let's go over this piece by piece because this is really important.
Sure.
The costs are at the top of your list. Have you looked at the data? What kind of costs are we talking about exactly?
Well, was estimates by one study that we've looked at show that the cost to the consumers would roughly be between $350 to $400 a year.
So that would be added to my grocery bill? Is that what you're saying? If I buy, you know, a bunch of bag of chips and things that have the GMO label on them, ultimately at the end of the year, that would add about $400 more to my grocery bill.
That's correct.
So what do you say to that, Tom?
Well, yeah, this is obviously not the first ballot measure we've heard opponents of, you know, talk about costs. The fact is, as it relates to costs of Prop 37, the only evidence they can point to that indicates that there will be this alleged $300 to $400 annual rise in food costs is a study that they funded themselves. There's no independent study backing that claim. There's no experience in the 50 other countries that already label genetically engineered foods that costs will go up. And in fact, the only independent study that we've seen looking at Prop 37 says that indeed a label at most would cost about $1.27 a year. A one-time cost, actually, not even a year, for the first year. Because, you know, keep in mind, these food manufacturers, they change their labels every 6 to 12 months anyway. And Prop 37 gives them 18 months, actually, to simply add a little extra ink with this extra information. You know, it's interesting because, you know, anytime you get into these discussions with our opponents, you know, one of the first things that they say is, you know, that, you know, whether it be farmers or whomever, you know, we're really interested in just giving consumers more information. That's what they say. So, you know, it's this fundamental agreement, then you think that they're with us, of course, but then they pile up $32 million to oppose, again, this very simple piece of information.
Well, and we do, Greg, we can look to places like Japan and almost every country in Europe.
Every country in Europe. And China and Russia.
Did
soon to be India.
And did prices go up in those countries?
Absolutely they did. And that's why the United States still has the lowest cost to the consumer of a food by percentage of disposable income of anywhere in the world. It's 9.47%. Comparing that to the EU, to Japan, to India, to all those other places, much, much higher percentage.
Well, there's no independent study that indicates that food costs, relative food costs between Europe and the United States have anything to do with genetically engineered crops. And in fact, a few years after the EU implemented this simple labeling requirement, I'd actually like to quote the European Commissioner for Health and Consumer Protection, David Byrne. He wrote, "When the current labeling regime was introduced in 1997, it did not result in increased cost, despite the horrifying double-digit prediction of some interests. Similarly, when Norway introduced its current labeling regime, it did not provoke any price increase or disruption in trade." So, you know, it's just, of course, you know, they're going to grab on to whatever they can to, again, sort of confuse what ultimately is an incredibly simple issue. The question is, the bottom line, you know, for farmers or food manufacturers is, are you comfortable, are you willing to simply share with consumers where your food is coming from, how it is grown? And if genetically engineered foods are really as safe as our opponents claim, there should be absolutely no, and or that they increase yields, which as a side note is also not proven, then put a label on it. Tell us, you know, let consumers decide. You know, our opponents are very interested in letting, you know, Monsanto and DuPont and Coca-Cola and Pepsi decide what they can feed us without telling us what they're feeding us. And we're just saying, you know what, we want to know. We want a choice. And, you know, if we want to buy it, we'll buy it. If we don't want to buy it, we won't buy it.
And what about that, Greg Paula? Why not let citizens decide?
Well, I'll quote a study by the University of California, Professors Alston and Sumner, that just came out that said, subverting the principle, Proposition 37 reinforces and exploits popular myths and misinformation spread by anti-GE campaigners. So I think that the fact is there's a lot of misinformation that Proposition 37 supporters are putting out there. The concept that the food supply should be doubted or questioned when, in fact, the Food and Drug Administration has deemed the GE cropping system safe, the World Health Organization has deemed it safe, the National Academy of Sciences has deemed it safe, and, in fact, there have been trillions and trillions of servings of GE foods over the last 16, 18 years that have been delivered to the marketplace without a single reported incidence of any kind of ill health effects.
So then why not label it? They're perfectly safe. Why not label it?
They're perfectly safe.
Yeah.
And this labeling law is not just about labeling law. We're talking about No on 37. We're not talking about just a simple label.
That actually factually is all that Prop 37 is a label of genetically engineered foods. So, you know, you claim this mythological 400, you know, peer-reviewed studies. Actually, the fact is, for example, just in the past week, the first ever long-term study of one of the most widely used strains of genetically engineered corn, first ever long-term animal study of that was published, and it in fact showed evidence of harm. Tumors, kidney damage, liver damage, premature death. Now, look, I mean, the fact, you know, as it relates to the FDA, I think it's pretty commonly known that for the going on 10 or 20 years, their actions have been mostly on behalf of Monsanto and DuPont and Dow. And in fact, Monsanto's Michael Taylor has been a senior, member of the FDA who has influenced a lot of their decision making. Speaking of Monsanto having its hands in studies and influencing research, by the way, Monsanto The FDA does not require any independent studies of genetically engineered foods. But anyway, you brought up the UC Davis study, and it's important to know that one of those authors actually has also received money from Monsanto in the past. So, that study that you cited has been published nowhere. It's no peer-reviewed. The only place, in fact, that I'm aware of it being published is on the NOAM 37 website.
And Monsanto has given about $7 million so far to NOAM 37. And I do want to talk about the research because this is really important. I want to let listeners know that today we are having a debate about California's Proposition 37, which would require the mandatory labeling of genetically modified foods. So many eyes are on California because if this passes, California would become the first state in the country to require new labels on a host of food products, and it would have ramifications for citizens and farmers across the country. Today, we are joined by Tom Fendley, political director for Yes on 37, and so far their side has raised almost $4 million from mostly organic companies like Clif Bar, Nutiva, Organic Valley. The largest funder is Dr. Joseph Mercola at $1.1 million, and we will put this graphic on our website right after the show about funding. And then on the no side, we have Greg Paula. He's a cotton and corn farmer from Kern County. The Kern County Farm Bureau is one of the opponents to Prop 37. In addition to Monsanto's $7 million, you've got Pepsi, $1.7 million. They own Naked Juice. General Mills, $520,000. They own Larabar. Cascadian Farms, Kellogg, $632,000. They own Kashi, Garden Burger, and Morningstar. And if you'd like to join us, we already have a number of calls coming in. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. Where do you stand on Prop 37? Where do you stand on genetically modified foods? And what questions do you have? You can also post a comment to yourcallradio.org or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Molly in Carmel. Hi, Molly. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Cool. My only question is, really, a label, why not? I mean, this is so silly. They can run a bunch of labels and stick them on the bags. This whole game that has been getting played out of profits in favor of and just turning a blind eye to unintended consequences, like the study that your guest just referred to, and the fact that apparently the weeds are so out of control in these Roundup Ready fields in the Midwest, that guess what we're going to start doing? We're going to start napalming to take care of Roundup resistant weeds. So where do we stop destroying the fabric of life?
Well, thank you for calling in, Molly. Greg, do you want to comment on that and talk a little bit about Roundup?
Well, I'll tell you this. Resistance to any kind of material has been in place for many, many years, whether it's Roundup or any other materials. By the way, I don't think California agriculture has ever used napalm or anything like that to control weeds, but of course, the fact that there is resistance to any kind of material, that's a natural occurrence. That's natural selection. Insects, other weeds, and other pests to agriculture commonly develop resistance to any materials, and of course, even the organic sector, organic farming methods, there are a number of cases where there's documented resistance to materials used even in organic methods. So it's not something that is, I know the supporters of Proposition 37 like to paint this as an issue where we're going to develop super weeds and so forth, and that's rather laughable, I think, among those that actually know how resistance occurs.
It's actually not quite laughable. It's actually happening.
No, actually, it's quite laughable.
It's happening in the Midwest right now, where super weeds and super worms are developing resistance to the genetically engineered crops and the pesticides that go along with them, to the point where the EPA just a couple weeks ago said that indeed there is mounting evidence of concern that they become resistant. But, look, we agree on this point. Over time, pests develop resistance to herbicides and pesticides. I think you acknowledge that, and
that's not in dispute whatsoever.
Yeah, exactly right, and I totally agree with that. And that's why, over the last several years, we've seen an amazing rise in the use of pesticides and herbicides associated with genetically engineered crops. And that's why we have organizations like Pesticide Action Network and Pesticide Watch. We have the United Farm Workers and others who are indeed saying, look, don't believe the hype that genetically engineered crops result in a lower amount of pesticides. In fact, they've been directly linked to a massive increase in the use of herbicides and insecticides. And in fact, I mean, I think that we all know that that's actually the, these seeds are actually engineered for that very purpose. They are engineered to withstand these pesticides. So, you know, that's what we're dealing with here. Now, this recent...
Well, in fact, there's a reduction of 7 million pounds of pesticides associated with certain kinds of worms and so forth. So the overall net effect of the use of GE crops is actually less pesticides.
Well, the organizations who specialize in pesticide issues are behind us because they actually have quite different data that actually links genetically engineered crops as a whole to a massive increase.
Well, there's a whole number of studies that we could go back and forth on, and I could disprove yours, and you could disprove mine.
Though, at the end of the day, who do you... At the end of the day, though, you know, do you actually trust, you know, Monsanto and DuPont, those who are making money off of these pesticides, or do you actually listen to organizations whose sole purpose, or do you trust organizations whose sole reason for being is to reduce pesticide
use? Let me ask you, Tom, because Greg points to the originator of Prop 37. Can you talk about where this came from?
Yeah, I'd love to, actually. You know, that's another kind of fun thing that anytime you end up with a ballot measure... It is fun because of course you have lawyers involved in drafting the actual language of the measure because you need it to withstand scrutiny at the legal level, which it does. But the fact of the matter is Prop 37 was inspired by moms and grandmothers around the state. This is a genuine bottom-up grassroots movement of people in California and actually throughout the country who are becoming increasingly concerned about genetically engineered foods and the safety of them, and are simply saying, so, you know, that's what happened. Pam Larry and some other volunteers, got this thing going more than a year ago. They ended up putting on the ballot through thousands of volunteers. That's who's behind Prop 37. And you know, they're not going away. This is a part of a national effort.
And why did you decide to do this at the state level? Is it because a bill has been introduced in Washington several times and hasn't gone anywhere, right?
Well, exactly right. I mean, there have actually been 19 states that have already tried to pass labeling measures, and including one here in California that would have labeled genetically engineered salmon. And what happens is, you know, Monsanto and DuPont, they end up... I think that our listeners are not naive enough to not understand that these companies have a lot of influence over our legislators through various means. So the bottom line is both at the state level, 19 states, and at the federal level, there's been total inaction. And that's actually the beautiful thing about the ballot initiative process, is that we can go straight to voters and ask what they think.
And how can you pass a law like this at the state level? It would only apply to California, right?
That's what a ballot measure will do. You know, that this will make it the law of the land in California. And we would have been thrilled if the legislature itself chose to pass a law like this, but they didn't and wouldn't. So we're going to make sure that voters do.
Even though it's a global food system, how would it work in a single state?
Well, you know, this will apply to California. So goods that are sold in California in our supermarkets are going to need to be labeled. It'll be up to the companies to decide whether or not they actually then want to share this information with the rest of the country and label their products like, again, they already do in 50 other countries.
And that is Tom Fendley. He's with Yes on 37. We're also joined by Greg Paula. He's with No on 37, GMO labeling. And we will get to your phone calls right after this.
This is Local Public Radio, KALW, San Francisco. Wanted to take just a moment to thank some of our KALW listeners who made our fall interruption-free membership campaign such a success. Folks like Samuel McClelland of San Francisco, G. Corey Warren of San Francisco, and Tatiana Zambazova of the city as well. We continue now with the second half of your call. This is KALW San Francisco. Online, KALW.org.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. And coming up tomorrow, we'll have a conversation about whether anyone should be held responsible for the financial crisis. Not one executive has been charged. In the late 80s, during the savings and loan crisis, we saw about 800 jailed bank officials. So what's different about this crisis? Should anyone be held responsible? That is tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are having a debate about Proposition 37. This would require the mandatory labeling of genetically modified foods. Oh, and before I forget, I just want to mention that October 22nd is the last day to register to be eligible to vote in the November 6th election. And for the very first time in the state of California, you can now register online. If you go to the Secretary of State's website, for the first time ever, you can register online. That's really important information. So today we are talking about Prop 37, which will be on the ballot. If it passes, California would become the first state in the country to require new GMO labels. A lot of money is being poured into this campaign. On the yes side, you've got $4 million from mostly small organic companies like Amy's, Dr. Bronner's, Nature's Path. Dr. Joseph Mercola is the top funder, giving about $1.1 million. And Tom Fenley is political director for the Yes on 37 side. Over on the no side, you've got $32.5 million from mostly multinationals, a lot of corporations that own organic foods like Dean Foods, $253,000. They own Silk and Horizon Organic. You've got Rich Products, $225,000. They own French Meadow, Smucker's, Santa Cruz Organic, $387,000. And then at the top, you've got Monsanto, $7 million, Pepsi, $1.7 million. And on the no side, we are joined by Greg Paula. He's a cotton and corn farmer from Kern County. We have full lines. We'll have a couple open in just a few minutes at 866-798-8255. You can also leave a comment at yourcallradio.org or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear next from William in Belvedere. Hi, William. Welcome to the show.
Yes. Hello. I have a question. Is it Mr. Pollock?
Paula. Yes.
I have a question for Mr. Paula. He made a definite statement that when this was introduced in Europe, the labeling, that it had increased the cost of the food. Am I right in that? First of all, I want to be sure that I heard what he said correctly.
Greg?
Yes, okay.
Yes.
Now, I would like to ask him then how he would square that perception with the statement in the New York Times on September 13th in an article that dealt with this. And in that, it quoted David Byrne, B-Y-R-N-E, who was then the European Commissioner for Health and Consumer Protection of the European Parliament. And the Times asked him, and his quote was, "When the labeling regime was introduced, it did not result in increased costs." So how would he square his knowledge about that with the knowledge of David Byrne, who was the head of consumer protection for the European Parliament, who said that it did not increase the costs?
Well, I haven't seen the article specifically in the New York Times that you're referring to. But I can tell you this, that there have been a number of instances where there's been challenges to the opinion of the Economic Union Commission regarding that. And I can just tell you that it's my opinion that that did not take place, and that's where I stand.
Okay, can I say something?
Yes.
Actually, I was curious about it, too, because I think things can sometimes appear in the papers, and then you wonder about it. So I went to the source of the information, which was an address that David Byrne, who was the commissioner, provided to the European Parliament. And that indeed was exactly the quotation that he had provided. So I appreciate you having your opinion, but as an individual, quite frankly, if I have to choose between your opinion, I'm sure you're a very capable cotton farmer, and the European Commissioner for Health and Consumer Protection, I have to come down on the other side. Just one thing that I'd like to clarify about what an earlier caller said, which was about this napalm. And Mr. Paula is quite right that there's no talk about using napalm in California. But what it had to do with was that when the Roundup was used on the Roundup-ready crops, the weeds did develop resistance. So now what they're proposing is not napalm, but what the Monsanto and Dow are proposing is that they should be able to use 2,4-D. For those of us who were around during the Vietnam War, you will remember that that was the Agent Orange constituent, which subsequently was found to cause cancer. But since the weeds have become resistant to the Roundup because they're using Roundup-ready crops, now the companies want to use 2,4-D, and they've applied to the FDA to do so. And but it is not napalm; it's Agent Orange. That's pretty bad too.
Indeed, and
indeed,
to be clear,
I would say that the correct response is there are a whole host of properly used herbicides that have been used for many years that are not at the level of safety as Agent Orange, but in fact are very safe materials that have been used for many years, and I could give you a whole list of them. There's a number of trade names that are out there. There's Gold, there's a number of other materials that are very safe to apply and are very effective at controlling the same weeds.
And Tom, you wanted to respond?
Well, just to add one other point, which is just the caller, I think, aptly brought up Agent Orange, and just so the other callers do understand, that Agent Orange was indeed one of the products of Monsanto. And in fact, they're on record at the time saying that Agent Orange was safe as well. So, you know, look, Monsanto makes its money by selling genetically engineered seeds and by selling chemicals. That's been there, and same with DuPont and same with Dow. And that's what this is about from their perspective. They want to be able to continue to sell these seeds, and they want to continue to sell the herbicides that go along with them. Meanwhile, Californians, all we're saying is, okay, great, you want to keep using them, go right ahead, but we just want to know whether it's in our food, and then decide for ourselves whether or not we'd like to buy it.
And Greg, we're getting a number of emails about the costs argument. And Marie-Louise writes in, I'm listening to your guest talk about the, quote, extra costs around labeling foods. This is the best argument you have, she writes. You're spending millions and millions of dollars to fight this proposition with that as your best argument. She says it just doesn't make sense. Why would you spend millions with that being your main argument?
Well, first of all, that's not our main argument. The main argument against Proposition 37 is that not only would it add cost to food to the consumers, not only would it not change the content of the food that consumers buy today, but there are a whole host of inequitable and unfair treatment within the law. It would allow exemptions for one class of individuals versus another.
What do you mean by that?
Well, there's a whole class of foods that are exempt from the labeling, and I would say that if I produce a crop that goes into those foods versus the ones that don't, I think that's treating farmers inequitably and unfair, and I think there's an opposition to that. This entire law has a lot of reliance upon simplicity, when in fact it actually points to something very different. It talks about the reliance on a sworn statement from a supplier as to whether or not the ingredients come from GE crops or not. So, for example, if a food that was exported from China or Bangladesh or Brazil or wherever in the world, there would be the expectation that that supplier would be held responsible for being truthful about the content of the food. I just don't think this law has safeguards in it to allow for reliance by the consumer. And in addition, the food itself, it's interesting that some of the callers talked about, you know, relying on the European Commission and the fact that those bodies are reliable. but our own Food and Drug Administration and is not somehow.
And let me ask you this, Greg. How does the food labeling law in California differ from the one in Europe, for example? Because Monsanto fully supported the labeling law in the United Kingdom. So how does it differ?
Well, I think it differs from the. This proposition differs greatly. I mean, this one creates these whole classes of exemptions. I think it's dependent upon whether or not it's, where it's sold. If it's sold in a restaurant versus sold in a grocery store, I think it's dependent upon, the ability of people to change the law. The enforcement provisions are such that anyone can bring a lawsuit in Superior Court and not have to prove that there's any harm associated with the action.
And I ask this because it's interesting that the press release for the labeling law in the UK, Monsanto said they fully support UK food manufacturers and retailers in their introduction of these labels. We believe you should be aware of all the facts before making a purchase.
Absolutely. But that's what the difference is. Those labeling laws do not have identical components that this proposition has.
If I may just step in, I mean, the notion that if this law were stronger and, for example, covered restaurants, which, is just, I just honestly always find it kind of interesting and almost funny because the implication is that if the law were stronger and did not exempt, for example, restaurants, that all of a sudden Monsanto and DuPont and Dow and Coke and Pepsi would suddenly be on board. I mean, it's just so on the one hand, they say it's too tough and burdensome and all these costs are going to go up, though there's no evidence of it. But on the other hand, they complain that there's these exemptions where, not everyone, not all entities need to label their genetically engineered foods. I mean, look, this is a modest measure. It's not modest relative to other states in the country because indeed no American knows which foods contain genetically engineered ingredients because there's no labels. But it is actually a modest measure relative to what a lot of the rest of the world is doing.
Well, Tom, I think we already have labeling laws throughout the U.S. that allow for certified organic label by USDA. And by definition, those foods cannot contain any ingredients that have come from genetically engineered crops.
That's right.
We have a system by which consumers already can rely on an entire gamut of foods that, by definition, give the consumer the information that they're seeking.
Right. Meanwhile, though, if they're in a store where there are no organic foods or they're looking at a particular product that is not organic, they actually do not know whether or not it contains genetically engineered ingredients. And that's the bottom line. All this does is add a little extra ink. As you say, they already track, farmers and manufacturers already track all kinds of information. And this adds one more piece for the products that don't make any reference whatsoever to genetically engineered ingredients.
And that is Tom Fenley. He is political director.
Sorry, but it's much more detailed than that.
That is Greg Paula. He is a cotton and corn farmer from Kern County with the No on 37 side. Again, they've raised almost $32.5 million from multinationals and corporations like Monsanto, Pepsi, and Coca-Cola, which own organic companies. Tom Fenley is political director for the Yes on 37 side. They've raised almost $4 million from mostly small organic companies like Amy's, Nature's Path, and Dr. Bronner's. And you can find a very detailed list of the funders at yourcallradio.org. And let's just go through a couple of calls back-to-back, and then we'll get responses from our listeners, or from our guests. Let's hear from Gail in Menlo Park. Hi, Gail.
Oh, hi there. Yes, I'm one of the army of mothers and grandmothers, all the ones I know who've been on the street collecting signatures and holding events are highly educated women, including a lot of scientists. And we don't trust all these arguments about safety any more than we trusted the arguments from the tobacco companies that cigarettes were safe. Big industry always trots out these same arguments. And they have, if they're big enough, like Monsanto, they have a big influence even in the universities, which are always struggling for money. I trust the Europeans a lot more, and I think they know what they're doing. I would mention that there are always arguments about putting any kind of labeling on the food, including the nutritional labeling that we all rely on nowadays. And finally, if you think that American food is cheap, it's only sometimes cheap because of the enormous subsidies that the taxpayers provide to these companies, direct subsidies, and in California, subsidies in the case of cotton and rice in the form of significantly cheap water. While the rest of us are paying a lot for our water, these farmers who use more water than the average farmer are getting their money for practically nothing. So don't talk to me about either safety or cheapness. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Gail. We'll get a response in just a few minutes. Let's hear from Ruth Ann in Berkeley. Hi, Ruth Ann.
Yeah, hi there. I wanted to ask, as a question open-ended, that I'm wondering that if in the event this bill does pass, could the industry use that as an excuse to raise prices and just say, see, we told you this labeling is making it way more expensive, and that's why we're charging XYZ dollars more. The ancillary question to that, and I wasn't around when it passed, even though I make use of all the FDA labels on foods right now, when that went into effect, which is tremendously helpful to me because I want to know what's in whatever I purchase. I always whip out my glasses at the supermarket because I have aging eyes and I can't see it without. But I'm wondering, was there the same, this is an open-ended question, the same argument that putting those labels on would cost money? Did the same scare tactics come up?
All right, thank you for the question. We'll take a few more callers and get responses. Let's hear from Emma in Cupertino. Hi, Emma. Welcome to the show.
Yes, hi. Good morning. I'm a consumer, and I like to make this comment. I'm pro 37, and the reason I'm pro 37 is that I use a lot of soy product. And in the old days, soy product, like soy milk, if you live in the room temperature 2-3 days, it go bad. But nowadays, you can leave it outdoor, I mean, in the room temperature for days, and it doesn't go bad. And so I wonder if it's something to do with the GMO soy bean, and then maybe has a herbicide already embedded in the soy bean. So I wonder, inside our gut, there's a beneficial bacteria. Mm. So if I consume this kind of product, would that somehow kill the bacteria inside my gut, the beneficial bacteria? So if there's a GMO label, then I would know for sure.
Hmm. Well, Emma, I'm thinking we might need a scientist or a doctor on the show to answer that question. Tom, you're shaking your head. Greg, what would you say to Emma?
Frankly, I couldn't understand her very well, but
she eats a lot of soy.
Pardon?
She eats a lot of soy, and she's concerned about genetically modified soy.
Well, I have no concerns about the safety of genetically modified soy. It's been proven by the FDA is safe. The American Medical Association has come out in favor of it. There's no scientific documentation that points to the question of safety here. And that's why I think the putting the label on it also almost implies a warning. And I think that from, you know, if your callers or if consumers have a total distrust for everything associated with, you know, the Food and Drug Administration, the USDA, but the USDA, they apparently are relying on the certified organic labeling standards. I don't know if I have an argument for someone that has an entire distrust for any kind of authority. And I'm suggesting that, you know, that the consumers have no reason to believe that these products are unsafe. There's nothing that points to it.
Well, see, I just think consumers are smarter than that, and I think that they are capable of making their own decisions. If they choose to believe, you know, science and public you know, any sort of safety tests coming from the manufacturer of the food themselves, then great. With a label, they can purchase these products. If they don't trust them, then they then finally have the ability to not buy these products, knowing now, you know, which of the products contain genetically engineered ingredients. But, you know, at the end of the day, the reason why this, you know, not only Prop 37, but, you know, just nationally, the idea of labeling is so popular, and indeed, you know, across party lines, polls show high 80s, low 90s support for the idea of labeling. And the reality is that people come at it from all different perspectives. Some people like the idea of labeling because for health reasons. You know, they want to know such that they can even track for themselves whether particular genetically engineered foods harm them or, hey, maybe even help them. Who knows? You know, other people do it for religious reasons even, you know, and or, you know, on a related note, just sort of don't trust the idea of eating foods created in a lab by the same companies that gave us Agent Orange and DDT and PCBs. So, you know, at the end of the day, again, if these companies can end up showing value to these products, you know, if it ends up turning out that, you know, actually they're not only safe, but maybe they're cheaper too, you know, great. You know, this Prop 37 does not preclude these products from still being sold, and people can then end up deciding they want to buy them.
And what are your thoughts on Ruth Ann's question about whether this could give companies an excuse to raise food prices? And they can say, well, it's because of Prop 37.
Well, I mean, I think companies don't need any excuses. If they want to choose to raise their food prices, they can do so right now with or without Prop 37. I think the key question is just whether it inherently raises food prices. And again, there's no independent evidence of that. As I mentioned, the one cost study that came out of UC Davis that referenced these overblown sort of cost estimates, they actually, those two professors were actually, as disclosed in their so-called study, that they received money from the No on 37 campaign of up to $30,000 to do that study.
And we have a question also from Robert, who says he's concerned about setting policies like this at the ballot box. Time and again, well-intentioned laws like this lead to unintended consequences and, at best, nothing but lawsuits at worst. Assuming the law is not thrown out by the courts, it can only be altered by another popular vote, which is totally impractical. He says, I don't feel that I can assess whether this law is actually well-written and defensible.
You know, interesting, you know, Tom made a comment earlier that this law, this proposal was well drafted by a trial attorney, and that it's not likely to lead to lawsuits and so forth. But I'd have to say that it's interesting that the first lawsuit that was filed about this issue itself was by James Wheaton, who filed a lawsuit against the state for their interpretation of the legislative analyst's view of what it will do and how it will impact that. So, and of course, that lawsuit was lost by Mr. Wheaton. But so that the concept that it will lead to more lawsuits, and the fact that the supporters of Prop 37 say, "Oh no, that's not going to happen." It's interesting, before you've even put it on the ballot, we've already got them bringing a lawsuit about it.
Well, we don't have much time. Tom, what's your response to that?
Well, the only independent analysis done on whether Prop 37 would trigger this array of lawsuits was done by Dr. James Cooper of George Mason University. And he found, indeed, that there was no reason to believe that this would trigger lawsuits. So, again, that's the only independent analysis done on the measure.
Interestingly, George Mason University also receives monies from the opponents of No on 37. So I think wouldn't we want to be concerned about that kind of study?
Well, you can look at the study yourself as an independent study. So
okay.
Well, we've got time for one more caller. Let's hear from Dara in San Carlos. Hi, Dara. Welcome to the show.
Hi. This is kind of a question to the farmer out in Kern County. This is about the safety of these GMOs. During the Haiti...
And Dara, we don't have much time, so if you can be brief, thanks.
I'm sorry. After the earthquake in Haiti, Monsanto sent the GMO seeds to the people down there who were craving or starving, and the people of Haiti said, no, we don't want it, and sent it back. So those people knew it wasn't safe.
Greg, any response?
I'm not aware of that, and I really don't have a comment about whether or not Haiti deems something safe or the people of Haiti. I have a feeling that the people of California, who have already consumed trillions of servings of GE foods, believe it's safe,
because
along with USDA and EPA.
And the fact is, Greg, sorry to cut you off. We only have a minute. The fact is, if you shop in a grocery store, a big grocery store, you're eating GMO foods, right?
That's right.
That's the fact. So, Greg, we're getting a ton of emails from people saying, why shouldn't I be able to know? 30 seconds.
I think they should be able to know. My opposition is this particular proposition addresses a number of issues and has in place a number of aspects to it that are inherently unfair. It's unnecessary. It doesn't provide the consumers with any additional information that's of value to them in terms of the safety of the food, and it will certainly add to the cost.
And Tom? Yes, on 37. Why should this be labeled?
Well, at the end of the day, when all is said and done, it's pretty simple. We think that Californians should be empowered with the right to know what is in their food so that they can then make a more informed buying decision.
And that is Tom Fenley, political director with Yes on 37. They have raised almost $4 million. Greg Paula is with No on 37. He's a cotton and corn farmer, raised $32.5 million. You can find more information about who's funding these campaigns and more at yourcallradio.org. Tom and Greg, thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot for having me.
And thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for your phone calls and emails. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. Here's what's coming up tomorrow. Who should be held responsible for the financial crisis? On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation about the banking crisis of 2008. Not one executive has been charged or imprisoned. In the late 80s, during the savings and loan crisis, over 1,000 cases resulted in more than 800 jailed bank officials. So what's different about this crisis? Who do you think should be held responsible? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or to sign up for our podcast or newsletter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Raz is on and Ali Budner produced the show. Matt Martin is the executive producer. Pete Misick is our web editor and Becca Hoekstra is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer and Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and produced by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. Hi, I'm Lauren Meltzer from City Visions. Tonight on City Visions, we will discuss the new plan to put 5 digital billboards near the base of the San Francisco-Oakland Bay Bridge. Safety advocates have called the bright digital billboards television on a stick, which give drivers one more reason to take their eyes off the road. How are these billboards different than other highway billboards, and who stands to benefit from the sale and commercialization of this public airspace? Join us tonight at 7 p.m. on City Visions.
City Visions tonight at 7 here on Local Public Radio, KALW San Francisco. Stay tuned. Next, it's World Have Your Say from the BBC. And at noon from Radio Netherlands, the state we're in. This is KALW San Francisco.
Hello, welcome to World Have Your Say on the BBC. I'm Ben James, and you're talking about stories from France and from China.
Chinese workers are not forced into factories because of our insatiable desire for iPods. They choose to leave their homes in order to earn money, to learn new skills, and to see the world.
One of the most read stories online today is about a brawl at a Foxconn plant in northern China involving up to 2,000 workers. The company supplies many of the world's best-known technology brands. So when you buy Chinese goods, do you think about the people who made them? Post on facebook.com/worldhaveyoursay. Also, the leader of France's Front National Party says the ban on wearing Muslim veils in public there should be extended to Jewish skullcaps. What's your reaction? You can tweet as you listen. The hashtag is WHYS.